Mr. Macmillan, reel 5. What was the age range that the Navy took in people into the Navy? What was the range of the boys?
I've heard that some of the boys actually went in when they were 14. Until, I believe those days it was 18 when you started your official service. Officers, I believe some of them went in to the officers' corps, or whatever they call it, 10 or 12 in the, you know, pre-war. But I think the majority, I would think that I mix with, would go in about the age of 16, 17.
And drinking and smoking, at what age would they allow you to do that, if you're still in the boys' service?
I don't think it's so much as allowed as what was done underhand. I can't remember any definite age limit for drinking or smoking. No, I think it was just a case of when you went out of the barracks, if you wanted a drink or a smoke, you just to please yourself. I can't remember any embargo on it.
But within the barrack life itself,
no, no, I can't ever remember in the boys' training ship smoking or drinking. No, there was no, definitely not. There was no such, there was no canteen selling beer in the wildfire. Cigarettes, I'm not quite sure. Otherwise, there was just normal sweets and lemonade, etc.
I know you're of a young age, but certainly the older ones in the boys' group, did they get into the adult activities like gambling and at night and in the evening when they were relaxing?
No, I wouldn't say gambling, because we had no money to gamble with. Later on, I'll explain a bit more about that. But in the boys, when I was there, there was no gambling. I think most evenings was passed by, as we said in those days, swatting up on what happened that day. And various conversations of where each come from and each other's family, because we were Scotland, England, Ireland, and that. So we got a really good outlook in other people's lives.
And of course, presumably in the evening you would have a lot of cleaning to do, preparation for the next day, uniforms and equipment or anything of that nature.
Well, that was kept rather clean, because you were inspected every morning, and then on top of that you could have a snap kit inspection, so you had to keep everything reasonable, well, very clean, I would say, even to the boot polish, etc. Yeah, well, everything was as I said before, the hygiene in that in the Navy, I think, was particularly strong.
Did you have a pay parade for the what money you did get? Was it a weekly pay parade?
Weekly on, I believe, a Friday.
What was the process of getting your pay handed
just
to you?
Just going up in front of the paymaster, taking your cap off, putting it on the desk. The writer would ask your name, and then he would tell the paymaster, who could have been a lieutenant, a commander, your pay, which was, I believe, 4 shillings. And that was put on top of your hat, and you took it off and put it in your pocket, and that was it for the week. And that was your pay.
Did they take things like barrack room damages out of your pay? Was that an allocation to that?
No, the only thing I can remember taking out of my pay was there was so much sent to your mother or father, whichever the case may be. No, I can't ever remember. Ever in my days, having any anything taken off for damages. I dare say it did happen where you could have a fight or anything, but I honestly can't remember that ever happening.
Were there annual ceremonies in the Navy that as boys you had to parade and attend? Was there a Nelson's Day or a
well, let you paraded every morning as normal. Sunday was your best suit for church or divisions. I can't ever remember anything like Trafalgar Day or anything like that. This was 1938, which was only a year until the war started, and I think by 1938 everyone had a bit of an inkling that something, I think 1938 there was a bit of a, wasn't there a bit of a scare when Germany annexed, was it Czechoslovakia, part of, and I think that put the I think that put the forces on like a prepare for war footing. You, after that, you can see a difference in the training. But Trafalgar Day, no. I can't honestly ever remember taking part. Of course, as I said, being young boys, I suppose Trafalgar Day, if it happened, was the same as any other Sunday, which it would have been held on a Sunday, you know.
When your course as a boy was finished and you were moving into the adult end of the Navy, had you a passing out parade as your final act?
That is possible, but you must understand that after 2 or 3 months as a seaman, I changed over to the communication branch, and then we parted to the signal school at Chatham. They didn't have a signal school at Sheerness, so anyone going into signals was sent up to Chatham. So what happened to the boys after that, I'm afraid I don't know.
So were you still a boy when you went into the signal section?
I was a boy first class, but you automatically, when you go into the signal section, you automatically become an ordinary signalman. Where if I'd stopped in the seaman branch, I would have been an ordinary seaman. So it's a complete change over, absolutely completely. They're two totally different services, let us say.
What attracted you to the signals?
I don't really know. I think it was just a thought of learning the flags and the Morse code. It could have been, of course, then the thought of the rifle drill and rowing a whaler, which could have made me a bit dubious of the seaman branch. I think that was it. Nothing. Various boys get different ideas. Some went to gunnery, some went to torpedoes, some went to signals. Whether it was an easy escape out the seaman branch, I'll never know.
So what date would this be when you moved to the signals?
I think it'd be July 1938.
And this was at Chatham, did you say?
This was at Chatham, but the signal school at Chatham was what they call, it's part of Chatham Barracks, but it was separate. It's called East Camp, which was wooden huts, solely set up in those days for communication ratings. That's all that was in it, communication rating. There was no seamen. The gas school was in it, which the seamen come up, and they had a hut where you put your gas mask on and went in. What good it ever done, I'll never know, because I don't ever remember using a gas mask.
And you didn't go through this gas training?
Yes, everyone does. But as I say, for what reason, I don't know, because to me it was obvious if you were looking through binoculars, trying to read signals, a gas mask wouldn't be would only get in your way. But we done it, and
so can you tell me, before we move on to the kind of thing you were doing there, you say wooden huts, and were your sleeping quarters in wooden huts?
The sleeping quarters were your sleeping quarters, your living accommodation, eating was all in the wooden huts. The actual signal school was in the barracks itself. The wooden huts were solely for your living quarters.
Were they comfortable?
They were, actually. You know, you see, once again, you had hammocks. And I still maintain a hammock was a very comfortable bed to lie in. If you knew what you were doing, you would never fall out of one. I never fancied a bunk. I never had a bunk. I always preferred a hammock.
And in the huts, no beds, just hammocks.
Just hammocks, uh-huh. But the usual naval routine, when you got up in the morning, you'd done your hammock up, put it in the proper place, went, washed, shaved, showered, whatever the case. But once again, you could have snap kit inspections. So you had to keep everything really tidy. And then you were marched by the leader of your class to the signal school, which, as most people that went to Chatham will tell you, when you passed the gunnery school, you had to double march. That was absolutely essential. There was always a gunnery instructor who was normally a lieutenant, probably well over 6 feet, and he made sure you doubled. When you got to the barracks, you had to cross the parade ground to get to the signal school. Once again, you had to double. No matter, obviously, if you were ill on crutches, but that was absolutely essential.
And that was just a naval thing?
That was just a naval everyday occurrence. No matter if you went up 10 times, you had to double past the gunnery school.
And there's no thinking behind that, no reason for it.
The only reason I can think of was to keep you smart. Whether there's something happened years ago, I do not know. But you could not get past. There was always a gunnery officer there. And you always knew, because he used to wear black gaiters, ramrod stiff, you know. And he made sure that you double past the gunnery school. Tradition, I don't know. No, I couldn't be honestly tell you about that.
Can you tell me about the signal school? What kind of equipment and rooms that you were in? How was it organized?
The signal school itself was more like a school, which we have in civilian life. All classrooms, and as usual, it had a mast, which of course you had to use to hoist your flags on. And it had a bridge which was high, where you passed various signals from.
The ship's bridge.
Yes, but there wasn't the equipment like compasses and that. And down where the mast was, you had the flag lockers, which had all, I'm not quite sure, maybe 40, 50 flags in. And that, once again, you had a petty officer who, in the signal branch, is called a yeoman of signals. That You're in the signals as a petty officer, not chief petty officer. And you had him for the whole of your course, right through your 9 months.
Do you remember yours, the name of it?
No. I honor? No. No. I suppose I should do, because it was very good.
Well, you've arrived in the signal school. What was the very first lesson or thing that they trained you on?
The first thing is between learning the Morse code, which applied to semaphore flags, Morse code for the oldest lamps, that was the signalling lamps, in the classroom for boot work, which was very detailed, believe you me. And you had the books in there that you would normally get at sea. Not books. The books would be, if your commanding officer wanted anything done to his ships at sea, he would tell the Yomna signals, I want to go to 26 knots. The yeoman will look up the appropriate phrase in the book, and opposite that phrase would be the flag signal for it. Then, and then outside, we would have a semaphore lesson, a flag hoisting lesson, which at first was very complicated. Aldous lamps, and which may surprise quite a lot of people, typewriters and sewing machines. Typewriters, because if you went to a big ship and you were connected up to a buoy, you had a teleprinter. The sewing machine to repair torn flags. People have probably laughed, but that was true. That was a basic day's work. That was the same practically every day of the week. At night time, after tea, most boys went down and had more studies. But I did forget one thing. Although you were attending the signal school, you still went for swimming lessons, etc., to pass your swimming tests. No rifle work, not for signalmen or telegraphists. And then you went on the parade ground. Now, this is where it comes very complicated to anyone listening. The yeoman of signals took you on the parade ground, but you didn't do marching as seamen march. Right turn, left turn, quick march, double march. When you went out, you were given a little answering pennant. It is very complicated. And your marching orders would be given as a fleet would be given. So instead of right turn, the yeoman of signals would sing out blue, which is the signal flag for together. Blue 9, which was 90 degrees to starboard. Or 9 blue, which was 90 degrees to port. Or he would shout, if you were marching along, he would shout, maybe, George 26. Now that is the signal for 26 knots at sea. Flag George is a speed flag. So once everyone understood what it meant, they would put the little flag up in acknowledgement, which was the same at sea. When you seen a signal from a flagship or anybody, you put your answering pennant two-thirds of the way up. When you understood the signal, you put it close up right to the top. Now you can understand that maybe 16 to 20 boys on a parade ground, and the yeoman, your instructor, shouts out whatever that comes to me, some turn left, some turn right, and it took a bit of trouble getting them all back together again. It was like seamen, left turn, right turn. There's always some that don't know the left from the right. The same applied in the single branch. But that was quite nice because it meant you're out in the open air. And eventually you got it off reasonably good, let's see. So in the morning when you went down after breakfast, you had a semaphore exercise with the semaphore flags, but you had also another one with mechanical arms, which was a contraption that you moved, and instead of you moving your arms, there was two arms on this contraption that made the letters. Following that, you would get you would spread out all over the signal school ground in twos, and you would get the best. Then you would change round and you would write down for the other chap. Then you would get a flashing light signal, which again resembled at sea, with the flashing lights on the yard arms of the ships of the etc., which was abolished obviously in years to come later on. And then you may have a flag hoisting morning, which once again got a bit complicated, because if there was one to hoist, two to bend on, eventually you got so good that the chap from the top could start bending the flags on, and the chap from the bottom could work them from the bottom, so eventually they come together. I know it sounds rather funny, but this was an all preparation for going to sea.
This, what you talk about, this chap on the top. I mean, can you explain that?
That's it. The chap on the top, he's tacking the heads of the flags on, and the little clips you put them on with. You have a chap that hoists them when they're all on together. The chap on the tail, he's working from the last flag. And you always know which way the flag is, because the head had a short piece of avir, we'll say, and the bottom had a longer piece, so you knew what was the top. But eventually you could tell by touch. But learning them all in the lockers, they were in, we'll say, 4-inch little squares, and you poked them in, but you left the head and the tail tacked out so you could grab them. And you had to learn, I think, the top were the pennants, and then the flags, and then the numerals, and you carried massive red flags, black flags, for various things which didn't apply after the war started. This was all anticipating a peacetime navy.
So in each of those lockers you had, in fact, the core, presumably, with the flags on them, and you just pulled them out when you had to get them out, you pulled them out, and then you could change them. Is that the process?
Eventually you got so efficient that you could bend them on in the lockers without dragging them all out. Eventually you could have had a blindfold on. You could have said, oh, flag Harry's there, and so-and-so's there. It come natural. Something else I was going to mention to you, and I can't. Each flag has its own meaning.
Can you describe one, possibly one simple kind of message that you did with flags?
Well, it's easier explaining when you're at sea than when you're...
But we can leave it till then. We can leave it till we get to sea.
Right. Now, normally, when we went to sea, the destroyers, Scapa Flow I'm talking about, the destroyers went out one entrance, and the battleships, aircraft carriers, and out the other. And you would get the signal from the flagship, from screening diagram, whatever it may be. Of course, you looked up the book to find what screening diagram, and you knew where, what position you were. Position Abel Baker, or whatever it might be. And then you just hoisted position Abel. And then the flagship would get you settled down. You would put course, which was the course pennant, and then the flags underneath, 265 or whatever it may be. Tack line, that's the space between the two sections of the flag. George 18, speed 18 knots. And you would answer that accordingly. It would be hoisted by the flagship, repeated normally by the senior officer of the cruisers and the destroyer flotilla leader. Now, once the destroyer flotilla leader seen all his flotilla answering and understood it, he would hoist the flag to let the flagship know that they understood the signal. And then on the command down, then you'd done the appropriate manoeuvre.
What happened if someone didn't understand and put the wrong answer up?
No, you don't answer a flag signal until you understand it.
But could there be a delay while you were waiting for someone to...
Oh, yes. I mean, I remember a case years later on in the Mediterranean. We had some young signalmen drafted to the ship, two actually, and I was sent for, this young signalman couldn't understand the signal. And I know how hard it must be, because when I got down to ask them about it, I think he'd only done 2 or 3 months training, which I had done over a year, and I'd been at sea then for 3 or 4 years. I appreciated that he didn't quite know. But you see, until every ship answers properly, that manoeuvre cannot be carried out. And if you don't answer quickly and the flagship thinks that you hold things up, they'll hoist your pennants, your number of your ship, just over the flag locket and wave them up and down as if to say, get a move on that, whatnot, you know. But during war, signals were not complicated, because they had to do away with a lot of things, you understand.
Can we start now, and as I say, you've just arrived, you're going into these early lessons and so on. Can we look at, say, Morse code first? How were you trained on Morse code?
You're trained on Morse code, they give you a little book, and in it, it's got the Morse code and the semaphore alphabet, with the appropriate dot dash for A, and it goes right down telling you what they are. And the semaphore, with the semaphore flaps. And then on top of that, you also had a lesson in wireless telegraphy, where you had the earphones on. They'd done it very slow, because signalmen were not as good as telegraphists. And that's how you learnt the Morse code. And then you could go out. In the school itself, there was Morse keys, which you could learn on. You could go and learn semaphore. Or you could go and borrow a couple of signal Aldous lamps and make messages to each other. I mean, sometimes you make the message, you have to go look down, a dot and a dash, make a dot, and then you should look down for the next letter, you know.